Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 48. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of ISKCON. As fire in the forest immediately burns to ashes an angry snake, so by the previous order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately burnt to ashes the created demon to protect the Lord's devotee. Purport. As a pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish, although in such danger, did not move an inch from his position, nor did he request the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give him protection. He was fixed in understanding, and it was certain that he was simply thinking of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the core of his heart. A devotee is never fearful of his death, for he meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead always, not for any material profit, but as his duty. The Lord, however, knows how to protect his devotee. As indicated by the words, Pragdishtam, the Lord knew everything. Therefore, before anything happened, he had already arranged for his chakra to protect Maharaj Ambarish. This protection is offered to a devotee even from the very beginning of his devotional service. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. If one simply begins devotional service, he is immediately protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Aham tvam sarva pape bhyo mokshayashami. Protection begins immediately. The Lord is so kind and merciful that He gives the devotee proper guidance and all protection, and thus the devotee very peacefully makes solid progress in Krishna consciousness without outward disturbances. A serpent may be very angry and ready to bite, but the furious snake is helpless when faced by a blazing fire in the forest. Although an enemy of a devotee may be very strong, he is compared to an angry serpent before the fire of devotional service. An example is being given. We'll find throughout Shastra that examples are often given. Examples or analogies, they help us to understand that which is difficult to understand by drawing a comparison with something which is easily understandable, or something, giving a comparison to something that was within our experience so that we can better understand that which is beyond our experience. Because Shastra, especially this part of the Shastra that is not the Trigunya Vishaya Veda, not the Karmakanda section of the Shastra, that also, there are so many things. We don't see the devas in heaven, but they are described there. But especially this part of the Shastra, this is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which deals with that which is beyond avamanasagochara. It's beyond actually even description by words or understanding by the mind. Description of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His devotees and the relationship between them. So this is atisudurbod. That is, his words are given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bodha means thinking or thinking capacity. And durbodh means difficult to understand. And sudurbodh means very difficult. And adisudurbodh means very, very difficult to understand. So the example is being given of a snake being burned by a forest fire. A snake, if it come across a snake, immediately we feel fearful. Snake automatically generates fear, even though most of them are not poisonous or dangerous to human beings. But still, some of them are. Many people die in Bengal from snake bites, especially in Bengal more than other parts of India. Cobras and crates. So if you come across a snake, then even if it's not poisonous, the tendency there is to feel very fearful. And what to speak if it is poisonous? And the snake, by nature, is very angry. very envious creatures. A snake, sometimes we call someone a snake. If we call someone a snake, it's not a compliment. It's a very bad indictment of that person. A snake means someone, if we call someone a snake, it means someone who has the nature of a snake. He's so envious that for no reason except sheer bad will, he does harm to others. Because a snake, of course, if you tread on a snake, then he's likely to bite you. But sometimes it's not uncommon, a snake will bite and kill someone, even without any apparent reason. Many years ago, I remember here in Mayapur, I don't know if Santosh the gardener is still here. He's probably old now. But he told me that, he said, I hadn't seen him for some days. He said, I didn't come because some member of his family, they were all sleeping at night in the cottage. And in the morning they found his sister or some relative dead. And they found the incisions of the snake bite. She'd been bitten by a snake. And the thing was that she was in one corner and the snake must have come inside and passed so many other people and gone to her and bit her and come out again. Why? Well, swakarma phala bhupuma, everyone gets what's coming to them according to their karma. But that's one way of looking at it. Another way is that why should the snake do that? Why should he come inside? She's not doing any harm to him, simply sleeping. But that's the nature of a snake. You can see even the eyes of a snake, very envious, certain creatures, snakes, crocodiles, if you see their eyes, even cats somewhat, their eyes are like that. Very envious look, certain kind of eye. That's like as if there's fire inside their eye, their snake venom is said to be like fire, so they're always burning. That Prabhupada explained that in the Bhagavatam, comes in the 7th canto. The snakes, they always like to go on the sandalwood tree because the sandalwood tree is very cool, whereas the snakes are always hot because they're burning with envy. They have so much hate. Whatever they see, they hate. Very envious creatures. So the example is given here, a snake. If you come across a snake, then it's a very dangerous situation. But that very snake who is very dangerous, if he's caught in the forest fire, then he has no hope. He cannot escape. He has to burn. He himself, who is ready to burn others with the poison, which if that snake poison comes in your body, you'll feel your whole body burning. So they're full of fire, but they're consumed by a greater fire, the fire of the forest. So in the same way, the example is being given, that the demon created by Durvasa Muni was destroyed by the Sudarshan Chakra. Demon created, what does that mean? How can a jiva create another jiva? Actually, he's not creating a jiva, but he's, by his mystic power, he's able to bring into being a certain form, which a certain jiva with a certain kind of karma is ready to enter that form. So he has some dispensation from Lord Brahma to do as such. So he created a fearful demon that was certainly more powerful than Maharaj Ambarish, who, although he was the emperor of the world, and therefore certainly very powerful, and not only was he personally powerful, but he was protected by all his soldiers, and they also had many weapons, and there would be mystic weapons also. So Durvasa Muni, he created such a demon that even all the soldiers of Maharaj Ambarish and Maharaj Ambarish himself, with all their weapons and the astras, which are powered by mantras, they would not be able to withstand this terrible demon who was called into being specifically for the purpose of killing Maharaj Ambarish. So it was a bad situation. But immediately the Sudarshan Chakra came and killed that demon, just as a very dangerous snake is powerless in the burning forest fire. In other words, it's all relative. The snake may be very powerful and dangerous compared to other living beings, but there's a greater power than him. So in the same way, the demon created by Durvasa Muni, we can just imagine how much power Durvasa Muni has to create such a demon. His Brahma Teja, his the power of a Brahmana, more powerful than that of the Kshatriyas. So he was a very powerful Brahman, and he was able to bring into existence such a demon, but the power of the demon was insignificant before that of the Sudarshan Chakra. Prabhupada comments in the purport, he describes what is the reaction of Ambarish Maharaj. The reaction was no reaction. The reaction was he wasn't disturbed. Now that is a very great test. If one can remain undisturbed in bodily danger, that is a very great test. In bodily distress and pain, if one simply has faith that Krishna is protecting, that is the test of a pure devotee. Prabhupada writes here in the purport that if one simply begins devotional service, he is immediately protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Immediately, as soon as one takes up devotional service, Krishna's protection begins. However, according to the level of the devotee's advancement, that much he appreciates that. How do we define advancement? There are various methods to gauge advancement in devotional service. But the most basic method given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that uttam madham kanishta shadha anushari, that one is known as a topmost level devotee, middle level devotee, or neophyte devotee according to the development of his faith. So here Prabhupada states that even the neophyte devotee is protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may not have faith in that. Neophyte means jaha komal shadha shekanishta jan. The neophyte devotee is characterized by his very soft, pliable, not firm faith. Komal is soft. And then opposite, nishta, nishtavan. Someone who is very strong, fixed. That is a different kind of faith. So the neophyte devotee, he doesn't have very strong faith in Krishna. Still, Krishna is protecting him. Even the devotee, he may not believe it. But the pure devotee, that is one of his many extraordinary characteristics. Seems extraordinary to us. It is extraordinary, but especially from our perspective, it's extraordinary. Of course, from Vaikuntha perspective, everyone has full faith in Krishna in the spiritual world, but in this material world, in material existence, the basic characteristic is no faith in Krishna. Envy of Krishna. So, except the topmost devotees, everyone is in a... The other devotees means... Actually, the middle-level devotee, he's also said to have... It's also characterized by having dridha shraddha, firm faith. So the middle level devotee and the topmost devotee, they have firm faith in Krishna. But the neophyte devotee, his faith is flexible. In other words, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna will protect me, but I'm making some of my own arrangements also, just in case. Just in case Krishna doesn't protect me, well, I'm also going to go to the demigod temples, because you never know. Some people say Lord Shiva is God, so maybe he is, you never know. Better not to forget him. So this doesn't mean that a devotee is foolish. He doesn't think that, well, you know, Krishna's going to protect me, so now it's raining and I don't have to bring an umbrella. Krishna will hold one for me instead. He doesn't demand that Krishna serves him. He has faith in Krishna's protection, but at the same time, he doesn't demand or expect that. He knows that Krishna has his own ways of working. When the great demon was produced by the Muni, the Rasa Muni, Amrish Maharaj, he wasn't disturbed. He didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't know Sudarshan Chakra may come, or the demon may kill him, either way. But he thought that whatever happens, anyway, Krishna is protecting him. Marobi rakobi jo ichha toha. How's the next line go? Huh? Nitya dasa tua? I don't know it. You know it. You're a better scholar than me. So he says that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, whether you kill me or protect me, this body, whatever is your wish, you have the right to do, because you're the master. I'm only the servant. That is the feeling of a devotee. He doesn't think that, well, I'm Krishna's servant, so he has to do at least something for me. I'm serving him, so, you know, you think at least he'd make some arrangement to pay my bills or something. I have so many problems. You think he'd do something for me. I mean, not just nothing. I mean, I'm serving Krishna and I have so many problems. So many times people come and say, well, you know, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I have so many problems. What happened? Why isn't Krishna helping me? Generally, people expect that we'll do some religious process and God will help us. That's what all the bogus gurus, they advertise. That you come to me and I will help you. You just remember me. And I will help you. And in many cases it seems to work. Because we find many people say that, yes, I prayed to... We don't want to pollute the Bhagavatam class with the names of such persons. But anyway, you can fill in the blanks yourself. And it worked. You see, I had so many debts, and then I couldn't do anything, and then I prayed to Blip, and then all my problems were solved. That proves he's God, you see. I went to so many other gods and gurus and swamis, and they didn't work, and this one worked. So that proves he's God, because God's job is to help me. I'm the most important person, and God should help me. If there's any use to having God, then he should help me. This is a materialistic concept of religion. And it appears that such persons, they may have some such power given to them by Maya. We see that some bogus gurus, they become very popular. People go to them with material desires. And somehow it seems to work for them. So we can understand that through the agency of Krishna's external potency, he has invested some power in them for giving people material boons through some mystic process and misleading them and taking them to hell. So they're thinking I'm being benefited, but actually they're not at all benefited. They're more entangled in Maya by their so-called solving their material problems. And as a result of accepting someone who is not God as being God, or as a result of not accepting the proper acharyas or the proper path of devotional service, they are misled. So devotional service, or pure devotional service to Krishna, is of a different nature of religion than anything in this world. Sometimes people say, oh, what religion are you? Hare Krishna. That even Prabhupada wrote when he entered at the Amritsar Golden Temple. So there's a visitor's book. You had to write your name and all these things. And When he said religion, Prabhupada wrote Krishnaite. Krishnaite. I'm a Krishnaite. So, from the external point of view, Krishna consciousness appears to be another religion. In fact, we are trying to be recognized. We are very anxiously licking the feet or maybe other parts of the body of mundane scholars and religionists and journalists and academicians and saying, please recognize us as a bona fide religion. Dear Mr. Meat-Eating Christian, please recognize that we are not a cult. We are a bona fide religion. However, Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada stated, you will find in the Science of Self-Realization, it is not an ordinary religion. It is not a religion in the ordinary sense of the term. When one journalist asked Prabhupada, what is this religion? Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not a religion in the ordinary sense of the term. I'm paraphrasing. But it is a system of complete spiritual education. Religion is generally understood as a kind of faith. Prabhupada always said that Krishna consciousness is a science. It is the Bhagavat Tattva Vigyan, the science of knowledge of God, understanding which Mukta Sangasya Jayate. We become freed from all material conceptions, including materialistic religious conceptions. Even religion, what is going on in the name of religion generally in the world, it is simply another transformation of Maya. That's all. Prithivite jato kichu dharma nama chale bhagavata kahitaha paripurna chale. Prabhupada quoted this once. That whatever is going on in the name of the world, in the name of religion, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is all simply cheating. It is simply offering, yes, we are good, we are pious, we believe in God. I believe in God. I am a good man. I am good. But they have no understanding of God, nor desire to understand or surrender to Him. So this is Ambarish Maharaj. He's not a mundane religionist. He's not complaining to Krishna that, you see, I perform this Ekadashi fast only for your pleasure. Ekadashi, that's called Haribasa, the day of Hari. One should observe Ekadashi for the pleasure of Lord Hari. So he'd done that. That day is dear to Lord Hari. So he'd done that. And now, at the end of it, due to no fault of his own, it seems, he'd done everything perfectly. But all of a sudden, this problem came. First of all, Devrasa Muni came, and then he had to feed him. All right, very nice, very good. The great sage has come. We're very fortunate that you have graced our home on this auspicious day. But then he didn't come back. And then it's a problem. So what to do? What to do, what not to do? Drink some water. We did break our fast, and we had to make some decision. We did something. So then there came another problem. You can never expect. Problems can come at any time, even if we're engaged in devotional service of the Lord. The problem came in the form of an angry Durvasa Muni, and that's really a problem. So he sent a big demon. It wasn't expected. But Ambarish Maharaj, he wasn't disturbed. Anyone else would be disturbed. What's going on? I'm doing my devotional service very peacefully, not harming anyone, and all of a sudden, now this big demon is there. Ambarish Maharaj, not disturbed. Knowing that whatever is happening, that is simply the mercy of Krishna. I don't understand. I don't have to understand. I'm a very tiny little being. Krishna is very great. Krishna is unlimited. The devotee's faith is that whatever Krishna does, that surely he has my best interest in mind. Even if to me, I can't understand, because Krishna, he knows what he's doing. That is the faith of the devotee. That certainly, avashya rakhibe Krishna, certainly Krishna will protect me, even if it appears that he's destroying me. That is the faith, full faith in Krishna. That it seems that Krishna is treating me very badly, or treating someone else very badly. Why should he do that? It seems, how is it that Krishna is kind? How is it that he is good if he's putting his devotees into so much difficulty? But the devotee has firm faith that whatever Krishna does, then he knows what he's doing. I'm a tiny little being. What can I know? What is for my benefit? So if Krishna is arranging this, he's arranging to destroy me. Even I had so many plans. Ambarish Maharaj is serving Krishna, serving the deity in so many ways. He must have had so many plans for increasing the seva and organizing festivals and so many different things. But then Krishna, it appeared that everything is about to be finished suddenly. There doesn't seem to be any sense in that. But Ambarish Maharaj, undisturbed, because he has full faith that Krishna's plan, that is supreme. He didn't lose faith. He kept his faith. And actually, Krishna, through the agency of his Sudarshan Chakra, protected him. But a devotee can understand that even if, in this circumstance, the demon created by Durvasa Muni had destroyed the body of Ambarish Maharaj, then Krishna still protected him. How? Because Krishna's protection, what does that mean? That Krishna is protecting his devotee from not being Krishna conscious. That also, that is the actual danger. Losing the body, that you have to do anyway, sometime or other. But the real danger is forgetting Krishna. So Krishna protects his devotee, even though it sometimes may appear he puts his devotee into a situation where he may forget Krishna. Just like we have the example of Priyavrata, good brahmachari, let me be a brahmachari. So Lord Brahma came and said, you're a very good brahmachari, you'd make a very good grihastha, we need you to rule the world. He said, well, maybe that's true, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be a brahmachari and remember Krishna and go back home, back to Krishna. No, later Lord Brahma came and he solved the whole thing. So it appeared that he was many years in Maya, but then ultimately, oh, I have to remember Krishna. Same thing. Bharat Maharaj, he appeared to fall down. Practically, he did fall down for some time. But Krishna made an arrangement that he would not be lost, that his devotional service would not be lost. Krishna protects. That is the faith of a devotee. That Krishna, everything in relationship with Krishna, is always auspicious. There's nothing inauspicious for a devotee. Of course, he may do something by his own past bad habit or some attraction to Maya, some residual attraction to Maya. He may do something which is not favorable for his devotional service. But from the very beginning, Krishna protects his devotee. Krishna looks after the devotee. When someone comes to Krishna, Krishna thinks, now this person has come to me, now I'm going to bring him to me. Even if he wants to run away somewhere here and there, I will bring him. This is Krishna's kindness. Sometimes it's very difficult to see how Krishna is being kind, because often Krishna appears to be very cruel. How can we understand Krishna is being kind when the Pandavas, righteous kings, ruling simply for the benefit of the citizens, pure devotees of Krishna, and they were put into so many difficulties, one after the other. You think, well, okay, we had some difficulty, and then, all right, now that's finished. And then another difficulty, and another difficulty. Bhima is poisoned, and they're put in the house, supposed to be burned to death. Visham Mahagni, Purushadada. Then in the forest, they're walking through the forest, and some big Rakshasa wants to kill them, and then the insult in the Asad Sabha, the insult of Draupadi, that's worse than being, for the Kshatriyas to be so insulted, that's worse, to lose all their kingdom and then to have to wander in the forest like beggars. Then the great battle, so many difficulties, one after their life was simply full of anxiety, one after the other. But Kunti Devi herself said, actually, Krishna, this is your mercy. That is your mercy. Because we remembered you. We had so many difficulties, so much anxiety. We may have thought, let me simply have a nice, peaceful life. Let me sit peacefully and do my bhajan. But Krishna didn't allow. Now you take so many difficulties. And remember me. Prabhupada writes here in the purport that Krishna, the Lord, is so kind and merciful that he gives the devotee proper guidance and all protection, and thus the devotee very peacefully makes solid progress in Krishna consciousness without outward disturbances. But we see devotees have so many, there's so many disturbances in devotees' lives. Maybe even in some cases more than that of materialistic people. But we see that devotees, they're not disturbed. A non-devotee is disturbed by any small thing. All kinds of small things, simply. Actually, the whole life of a non-devotee is simply small. He's just in a little tiny bubble. I, me, and mine. The whole universe. Me, my wife, or my ex-wife, and my third wife, and my children, and my dog, and my goldfish, and my TV, and this is me, this is my world. And he has so many disturbances. As a devotee, he's thinking of the welfare of all living beings. So many difficulties come upon devotees, especially those who try to preach Krishna consciousness. So many difficulties will come, struggling in this horrible Kali Yuga. But a devotee is peaceful, just like you'll see that's described in Prabhupada Lilamrita. Prabhupada struggles so much to get that Bombay property. And even what's in the Lilamrita is only a synopsis. There are so many other details which are not given and actually won't be given. Because there are so many underhand dealings. You can imagine some valuable property that there are so many underhand dealings. Anyone who knows anything about life in India knows that when you're talking about property transactions, then there are many nasty and all kinds of slippery things involved. So it was a very great struggle. But at the end, Prabhupada said, oh, so by Krishna's grace, we got this land without any difficulty, without any problems whatsoever. And Prabhupada himself went through so many difficulties. Wherever he was in the world, he was always thinking, what is going on with that land? I promised Krishna, I brought you here, I'm going to serve you here. So I promised you, now you have to protect my promise, but I have to do my part also. So he was simply thinking how to serve Krishna. That this land is meant for Krishna. Prabhupada was so attached. This Mr. N, as he's called in the Lilamrita, he couldn't imagine, because he'd already cheated other people, that he couldn't. Other people, eventually they gave up. Okay, you know, lose a few thousand, what to do? But he couldn't imagine that a sadhu's buying the land. Oh, that's good. No, sadhus are not attached. He'll be an easy one to cheat. But he couldn't imagine that Prabhupada would be so attached and stubborn. Tejas Prabhu was giving the example the other day. There's a saying, how was the copper wire invented? That someone got a 1 cent coin, two people they're pulling, and they're both so attached they won't let go. Or another example, that on the 1 cent coin there's Abraham Lincoln, so someone's holding it so tight Abraham Lincoln will jump off. So he was saying Prabhupada was like that. He was so attached to every cent for Krishna. He would shout at devotees. Suddenly he would be shouting at devotees for 20 minutes because they wasted a few paisa. So it appears very attached. But he was fully attached that everything should be used for Krishna's service. And he thought it a great disturbance, a great difficulty that even anything should be misused. Any cents or paisa or any time should be misused. Anything. Hear this. Here in Mayapur, Bhavananda, well-known name in Mayapur, he described that Prabhupada would walk around the property, and if there was a tap, if it would drip one drop every hour, Prabhupada would come exactly at that time and chastise all the managers. Why are you wasting water? Prabhupada is trying, is giving all energy, more than anyone could imagine, to serve Krishna, taking so many disturbances and so many difficulties, but himself very peaceful, fully peaceful, because full faith in Krishna. I'm simply, as Prabhupada uses the word in the purport, doing his, the devotee does his duty. A devotee is never fearful of his death. For he meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead always, not for any material profit, but as his duty. Of course, for a pure devotee, it's more than duty. It's natural to always think of Krishna. And that is the attitude of the devotee. He tries, gives, as Prabhupada said, we have to give gallons of blood to make one devotee. And Prabhupada, he made thousands of devotees all over the world. How many gallons of blood did he give? More than is in his body. It means he gave more. More, always giving. So, you see here, we're talking about Ambarish Maharaj, but these qualities, all the qualities of the great devotees, yasyasti bhakti bhagavatya kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate suraha. All the qualities of the great personalities described in Bhagavata, we can find in, definitely we'll find in the personality of Srila Prabhupada. And anyone who is following in the footsteps of Prabhupada, they can also start to develop those qualities. As much as they surrender and have faith, they will also be blessed in that way. So we have these, Prabhupada has kindly given us these nice Bhagavatam purports to study every day and reflect and see what is going on here. What is the difference between Ambarish Maharaj? What is the difference with Durvasa Muni? It's not simply some mythology. It's a fact. We've seen that even in present day, our acharyas, they are still living by the same principle. And millions of years ago, Ambarish Maharaj, full faith, full dedication in Krishna. And still that is going on. Hare Krishna. The point is being made, I made a little cynical remark there about devotees wanting to be recognized as a bona fide religion. So the point is being made that sometimes to facilitate our preaching, then we get recognized by different government bodies and this and that as a bona fide religion. Yeah, that's good. That's all right. That should be done. That will facilitate our preaching. But at the same time, we shouldn't think that our aim of life is to be recognized as a bona fide religion. And for that purpose, we have to, if we have to change our philosophy and hide this and hide that and say that, yes, well, we also agree that beef eating is good and all religions are the same, and we shouldn't prostitute ourselves, just sell our souls, maintain our principles and be recognized. If we have to, if for the sake of being recognized as a so-called bona fide religion, what does it mean bona fide anyway? Who says what's bona fide? Some scholar in the university, Krishna says what is bona fide. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranita. What is bona fide is that which is recognized by Krishna. So these foolish people, they think they will decide what is bona fide. And unfortunately, we have to live in this world according to their stupid laws and their silly way of thinking. So we may have to go along with it as a kind of show. That can be useful. But we have to be very careful also. I was hearing in one country that they're getting recognized as a bona fide religion, and even the government is going to give them some money, and they were thinking this is very good, and then the recognized priests of this religion, the Hare Krishna religion, they'll get some payment from the government. I thought, that's it, finished. They're getting paid by the government, finished. Now they're really in trouble. Now you're in the pay of the government. Then you have to dance according to their tune. Very dangerous position. So we should be careful. If we need some kind of recognition, actually we don't need, but it can be useful for various things. But see, the main thing is not that we should be recognized on their terms, but rather they should recognize us on our terms. Our terms means Krishna's terms. If for the sake of recognition we have to compromise, then it's not worth it. I mean, these are all general statements. We have to see local conditions and so many different things. But we always have to keep very clearly what is our aim, what pure devotional service. Sometimes we make some adjustment, and then, we'll just adjust this way a little bit, and then later we'll adjust it back. We'll make some compromise, and that will make it easy, but then that will make it easier, and then, but later on we'll adjust, but it doesn't, it comes down. The standard comes down. That's the job of acharyas, always to bring the standard down, and everyone else is always trying to, everyone who wants to live very comfortably in society and be a devotee, they're always trying to pull the standards down. Whereas the acharya's job is to always pull the standard up, just like one story I'll tell. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then I'm going to stop, this is late. That one man came to him and said, why are you telling all these difficult things? There's no fish eating in Bengal. There are many Vaishnavas who eat fish. Surprising, maybe, but anyway, they chant Hare Krishna, or maybe some other mantras which they invented or someone else invented. Something to do with Krishna. And they play mridangas and they have tilak. But they also eat fish. Some of them even offer it with tulsi to Krishna. So one man came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, why are you teaching us all these difficult things? No eating fish and so many things. Why don't you give us an easier path? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that you are fallen in the well. My business is to pull you up, not that you will pull me down to be with you. So having said that, I'll say Hare Krishna and we'll finish here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.